so much paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadness.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 951 of Dread Media, but more importantly, welcome to the Year in Review 2025 episode. Happy New Year, everyone. We're in 2026. Surely 2026 has got to be better than 2025, right? 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 Oh, anyway, here we are. Here we are, but we are here to talk about the best stuff of 2025, according to me. And let me shout out one of my favorite parts of 2025, the Patron Dreadites. Thank you so much for all your support. If you want to become part of an elite crew who's getting this episode early, among other perks, go to patreon.com/dreadmedia. patreon.com/dreadmedia. All right. I don't need to say what's coming up next because you guys already know. This is me talking about my very favorite things from 2025. My favorite books, my favorite TV shows, my favorite podcasts, comic books, random releases that don't fit other categories, my favorite movies, following that with a brand new category, because there were so many that I enjoyed this year, favorite documentaries, top five documentaries there, things that aren't necessarily releases, things from 2025, and then, you know, basically what I'm looking forward to in 2026, which is basically just becoming a rehash of me repeating the same stuff that I'm looking forward to, that hasn't happened over the past couple years. We'll talk about that when we get there. And of course, you know, as well as anybody else, that I'm also playing a huge rundown of songs from my favorite albums of 2025. Kicking it off, we are going to play some Danko Jones. I don't know if you guys know who Danko Jones is, but I don't know, hard rock, heavy metal. I think he calls himself hard rock. He loves heavy metal. He's collaborated with Sepultura, but I don't think he calls himself heavy metal. I think there's a lot of Danko Jones songs you could call heavy metal. I mean, Danko Jones is very similar to like Motorhead. And I believe you can call a lot of Motorhead stuff heavy metal as well. I'm not sure if I've ever played Danko Jones on the show before, which is weird. But, you know, whenever I stumble across a brand new Danko Jones record, I check it out and I rock out because I know it's consistently going to rock your face off. And, I'm going to play a song from that. Sorry, that album. That album's called Leo Rising by Danko Jones. That's D-A-N-K-O Jones. It's the guy. It's also the name of the band. And on this song, this is going to be the first of a couple references to Megadeth, this episode, but, this features, legendary Megadeth lead guitarist and, solo artist living in Japan for the past 30 years or so, Marty Friedman playing some lead guitar on this track, and the track is called Diamond in the Rough. Let's get into it.
If you need some love, well, look me up. Might be your thing you're thinking of. Don't know what's right, just know what's tight. I can't fake it, I'm on fire tonight. Let's do this. What you want? I play your game, 'cause I like to flaunt. Well, if you feel me, let it be known. Don't make a pass, and leave me alone. to me. You don't play games like hide and seek. I like your vibe and you feel right when you touch me. Oh, that's what I like. Don't care about love, neither do you. Let's up the stakes before we're through.
About hey, we're back. Top 10 books. We always start with books. I love books. I think we were like horror literature focused for a good portion of the original run of the podcast. But you know what? Your boy has slowed down on the reading, and it's like my biggest shame, to be honest. I really wish I could read faster. I really feel like since I got COVID that first time when it really fucked me up, and I still, like, since then, I haven't been able to read as quickly as I used to, and, you know, get a little headachey and stuff when I read for too long now. I don't know. Maybe I'm just fucking getting old, or maybe I need new glasses. So I don't know, but here we are. I apologize if you can hear the, washing machine running in the background. It's, you know, it's better now, before my son starts working on his truck, cause then you're going to hear like an impact driver going, brr, brr. It's my life now. Just, constant, parade of now adult children coming in and out of the house all day, every day. So, it's a loud place now. So. That's just sort of a blanket apology. There's going to be a lot of recording. You know, usually I record this intro and then I throw to a review that's, you know, long previously recorded with either, you know, Tom or Dwayne or somebody else, or an interview, you know. But this is all me sitting down at this point on Saturday recording. I took some extra time to watch more movies, finish some television, although I think the television was finished, you know, well before the movies. But you know what? I want to, and you know, in the age of streaming, it's a little easier to do this too. But, you know, wanting to see as many of, you know, 2025's movies, you know, that I could before I needed to record this one. I mean, I could have taken another week, but I wanted to get it out, to you guys now. Also, very busy 2 weeks coming up. I got like my students doing exams that I have to like oversee and, also have to, you know, do some prep because second semester starts in 2 weeks. And, I don't have a prep block. So things are going to get a lot, hairier on this end. So, yeah, I wanted to get this out of the way, done and dusted. So everyone, had this to listen to. So, yeah, I don't know. I started talking about movies. We're here to talk about books right now. This is the top 10 books I read in 2025. We'll start with number 10 here. And the reason it's number 10, in fact, it would definitely be higher up the list. But the reason it's number 10 is because I haven't had time to actually finish reading this one. There's a couple stories left I need to get to. But even if all those stories suck, and looking at who they're by, they definitely won't. But even if all those stories suck, there's still enough awesomeness in this book to put on my best of the year list. I'm talking about The End of the World as We Know It, New Tales of Stephen King's The Stand, edited by Christopher Golden and Brian Keene. You know, a couple of my favorite anthologies. I'm going to turn around here for one sec. I think they're right behind me, but perhaps they're not. Come on now. Those are my Kim Newmans. There's some Clive Barker, but not what I'm looking for. Damn it. Where are those? All right. Well, I can't remember the titles. That's why I was looking for them. Anyway, there's a couple anthologies. You know, one of them, set in the world of Clive Barker's The Hellbound Heart. And then another, set in Clive Barker's world of Cabal, which, as, you know, Clive Barker fans know, is Nightbreed. And, I always loved those. And here we are. This is, one set in the world of The Stand, you know, stories that take place before Captain Trips, of course, during, and, you know, apparently well after. And, yeah, I'll stop there. no spoilers. Yeah, just some great, great shit. I'll talk about it a little bit, more in depth, once I get around to, finishing it on this show. I want to give it its, due. But, as for now, it's on the list. Number 9. Another anthology, another themed anthology. Long Division, Stories of Social Decay, Societal Collapse, and Bad Manners. It's edited by Doug Morano and Michael Bailey. And man, it's a really solid read. I like the theme, and as such, we get a lot of like suburban nightmare kind of interpretations. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. It's, yeah, really good. There were some definite standout stories. I'm going to read the authors that were definite standouts here. Alex Grecian, Ngobin Ankoa. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. Sorry. Koa, K-H-O-A. John F.D. Taff. I could barely read that. Fucking, I do need new glasses, I think. Clay McLeod Chapman, and Gary Bronbeck, the legendary Gary Bronbeck. His story, I don't remember titles, but yeah, really good. You see that, you know, floating around, your Kindle purchases. Yeah, I recommend giving that a look. It's a really fun book. Again, Long Division, Stories of Social Decay, Societal Collapse, and Bad Manners. Number 8, longtime friend of the show, and maybe not the last we'll hear from him, but boy, he had a really fun blitzkrieg of a read novel called Bloodsucker County. Is it a novella? I honestly, it's been so long. I read that very much at the beginning of the year. But it was something that I read very quickly. So is that a novella? or I think also Jeff Strand, it tends to be one of those authors that I can still read very quickly. It's just, I don't know, like the comedic patter seems to move quicker in my head for some reason. So yeah, something about that. And perhaps that's why he may be on this list more than once. But Bloodsucker County, even if it is a novella, I think it's more novel-sized, short novel. But man, he just creates this very convincing world in the very short space, in this sort of slice of life kind of thing. You know, I mentioned The Stand. There's obviously something going on in this world, at least this part of the world, that is sort of a post-apocalyptic living situation. And all of that is sort of like just the, I guess, setting with which this very small but very violent and very fun story takes place. Man, I mean, Jeff Strand is like absolutely killing it right now. Like, he's releasing so many novels, and, you know, even reading, you know, two of his novels a year, which is something I'm capable of, I can't keep up. So there's still like a mess of Jeff Strand books that I'm gonna have to catch up on at some point. But man, I love Jeff Strand. Hello, Jeff Strand, if you're listening. That was number 8. Number 7. This is, I guess it's not really a coffee table book, but it's more like an entertainment book. It's really, really fun. I don't recommend reading it all in one or two goes like I did, because I did get a little bored of it by the end, but it's not meant to be read like that. It is sort of like a coffee table book. This book, I should probably name the title: Making Monsters, Inside Stories from the Creators of Hollywood's Most Iconic Creatures, by Howard Berger and Marshall Julius. This is a photography book, essentially, depicting, you know, classic monsters up till modern day monsters, and also lots of anecdotes and stories about the creators of those monsters, or seeing these monsters for the first time, or from the creators of these monsters, and also monster kids, and also film directors, and also, you know, prominent fans, and also screenwriters and actors, and, you know, of classic films, and of course modern films that pay homage to those classics. It's just really fun. It's really fun. Yes, there's like a 2-page spread thing for Dana Gould, and Dana Gould's quotes appear in it. Of course, why wouldn't they? You know, really good, really good. Making Monsters, Inside Stories from the Creators of Hollywood's Most Iconic Creatures, by Howard Berger and Marshall Julius. I would say those inside stories are more like anecdotes, but here we are. Well, I guess this is the top 9 books. I just realized there's not 10. I might have missed one. I might have accidentally deleted one, but oh well, here we are. We're still going. Sorry. My next one is a novella, and it's a collaboration by two authors who I love absolutely, top to bottom. Love them both. Very different. When I heard that these two were collaborating on a story, I was like, no fucking way. And I'm talking about Edward Lee and Mary Sangiovanni, you know, the queen of cosmic horror and the king of absolute splatter, extreme horror, but also he does those like bizarre Lovecraft erotica, novels, and novellas. And, that's where this collaboration is more, leaning towards. But first I just want to say, to Edward Lee, on behalf of Dread Media, you know, we honor you and congratulate you on your retirement. You know, not a lot of, authors can do it, but I feel like he thinks he's done enough and he's done. He's going to live out, you know, the rest of his days, not hunched over at a keyboard, you know, good for him. But man, what a legacy this guy left behind. Big Head. Oh my God. Man, I can't even remember. It was like Honor at the Threshold. I'm trying to remember the name of some of those, Lovecraft erotica novellas, Trolley Number 1152 or something like that. I have a couple. Can I see the paperbacks beside me? I'm looking. I have a shelf full of thumbed through paperbacks. I have a couple of Ed Lee books there, but a bunch of my Ed Lee books are up with my signed limiteds because I have a bunch of those. But, you know, congratulations to Edward Lee. And the novella that he did with Mary Sangiovanni is called Strange Stones and is a cool little dimension-hopping look at a bit of a sleazy horror author who runs across a sexy young woman that he definitely shouldn't have at this writing convention. And, well, let's say he sees what Lovecraft's world is really like, shall we? Anyway, fantastic. Great little novella. Again, just shocked that those two, and I don't know, maybe that's the, maybe Mary finished it for him, or maybe they worked on it together. I don't know. I haven't like heard any interviews or anything about it, but, just a delightful, delightful read. So that was number five, I guess, because there's only nine on this, on this top 10 list. Number four is where we're going to be seeing our old friend Jeff Strand again. Jeff Strand's Your Body Will Never Be Found is, speaking of Ed Lee, it is sort of a dip into the more extreme horror. I feel like, there's some really, really gory shit in Bloodsucker County too. But I think more because of the, they're not vampires or monsters in this one. This one is just people. And yeah, and it's brutal and also features children. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. I was kind of shocked a couple times in this book, and that's nice. That's nice. And also, because it's Jeff Strand, even though this one is more, along the more serious extreme horror route, there's still turns of phrases in there that, you know, that'll make you smile and chuckle a little bit, you know, cause it's him. I don't think he can help it. He can't help it. He's a man possessed. Anyway, Your Body Will Never Be Found by Jeff Strand is absolute violent, shocking. Yeah, absolutely. Check it out. Check it out. Number three, I've made no quibbles about the Mountain Goats being one of my all-time favorite bands. And, that means I'm a big fan of John Darnielle because the Mountain Goats is John Darnielle. And John Darnielle released a book called This Year, 365 Songs Annotated. And what it is exactly what it says. For, there are installments of songs, so he publishes the lyrics and then discusses the writing, perhaps the recording, if it's been recorded. There are songs here that haven't even been recorded. There are songs that are lost to time. And then, of course, right up to, almost directly right up to modern day, we have, you know, those records as well collected in this book, and seeing his insight into each of these songs, into his process. He's got a very good memory for where he was and what he was doing at the time, and the motifs he has used throughout the years. And there's some criticism of it. Look, it's fascinating. This is like part poetry collection, part memoir, scattered memoir, and then also part like literary criticism. So one of my favorite reads of the year, for sure. This year, 365 songs annotated by John Darnielle. All one word, Darnielle. Number two, our oldest friend, David Agronoff's novel. So David has been working on Philip K. Dick scholarship now for several years. Been working on a nonfiction book on Philip K. Dick, and through his research process, he discovered that Philip K. Dick, actually, I think in a letter to Don Glut, Don Glut, right? Again, another famous monster kid, but also, you know, like prolific pulp horror and sci-fi author, and now cheesecake erotica filmmaker. Don Glut. I asked to interview Don Glut at one point, you know, back when they had those, you know, like Kiss of the Mummy movies or whatever, just like, you know, naked girls and movie monsters is kind of what he was doing for a little while out there. But yeah, well, where was I? Yeah, so, but through David Agronoff's process, that has nothing to do with this book. David Agronoff's process, he uncovered that Philip K. Dick wrote in a letter to Don Glut, I believe Don Glut, that, you know, sort of outlining his sort of template or process for writing a novel. And David decided to take that process and write his own Philip K. Dick novel, and it just so happens to be one of my very, very best reads of the year. Number two is Great America in Dead World by David Agronoff. This is a scary near future where the rich are constantly plugged into a simulated life slash social media platform, and the poor are forced to work to maintain the rich's bodies while they're off living virtually, and how everything comes crashing the fuck down. This is very, very pointed, and only getting more relevant. And I don't know. I read this, I think this was a summer read for me. It's not a summer read, but no, it's a great book. But it was a summer read, and it's only getting more and more like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, with AI and shit, and you know, everything that's gone on in the past 6 fucking months or so, it's pretty crazy and scary, but this book is fascinating and really smart and sharp, and you know, I've read pretty much everything David's written, and he just keeps getting better. I mean, yes, this is him like trying to ape the style of a Philip K. Dick novel, but this is also just a really great David Agronoff weird sci-fi novel as well, you know? So, yeah, absolute banger, this one. Absolute banger. Great America in Dead World by David Agronoff. David Agronoff. Went mealy mouth there for a second. Mealy mouth. And my number one favorite read of the year, this was also a summer read, probably more appropriate of a summer read, as everyone knows, and he's been on this show very, very shortly at a convention I interviewed him. I'm talking about the man Robin Bougie, one of my very favorite cartoonists. He of Cinema Sewer, the long-running zine, I guess, magazine, self-published magazine, that he commissions cartoons, cover art from other cartoonists, and in Cinema Sewer talks about, genre film, exploitation film, pornography, all in a loving manner with, cartoon doodles everywhere. And it's just absolute delightful. Everyone knows I love Cinema Sewer and Robin Bougie. And those magazines are collected into book collections that you can get. I have a nice complete collection of them. But he added a new kind of book this year. He's done this before, but this one is way right up my alley. This one is all about music, and it's called Sonic Sewer Volume 1 by Robin Bougie. It's a dense read. It's only about, I think, off the top of my head, like 230 pages or something. But man, it is a dense read, even with the cartoons that he draws in it and the sort of the mimeographed photography and articles and some really cool shit. Like Robin has all these like artist bios, and by artist I mean like musician bios, label bios, record hunting, you know, like tips and tricks, all these, you know. I consider myself to be very immersed in music of, you know, the, you know, the last half of the 20th century, but Bougie's got me beat. I learned a ton of shit reading this book. Also, it is entirely lettered by hand, and it's truly, truly, truly a labor of love. I can't wait for volume 2. So here it is. Check out Sonic Sewer Volume 1 by Robin Bougie. All right. So we're going to get this one out of the way. This is the craziest and most abrasive song I'm going to play in this episode of Dread Media. It is by, oh man, I should probably look this up so I get this right. I believe French. Yes. Okay. So Igor, Igorrr. Is a French musician. And, this, I've, you know, I've got a couple of his albums. How many albums does he have? I feel like I have his most recent three albums, the most recent of which, came out this year, rather 2025. And that's why it's going to have a song on it played on this episode, because it's 2025 release. I'm talking about Amen. Amen is a great, what do they call it? Oh, they don't even have a listing for genre. So lots of experimental recording techniques and experimental music in general. Also some, great appearances. There's actually, you know, he actually, collaborates on some songs with people. He's brought a bunch of other artists in to essentially make, Igor or Igor, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, like a real true band, as he's more, you know, Igor himself is more of like a multi-instrumentalist kind of guy. But yeah, it's more of a band feel. Also a bunch of guest musicians. There's Mike Leon, who's the bass player in CKY. A lot of like string players and stuff, like, you know, like a lot of, orchestral players whose names may even be very prominent, but I don't know. There's Trey Spruance from Secret Chiefs 3 and Mr. Bungle. He does guitar on one track. Scott Ian does guitar on one track. But the track I want to play is, an absolutely wild banger of a song. It's called Headbutt. And, before you ask, I'll just say, yes, it is supposed to sound like that. We'll be back to talk about some TV in a couple minutes. To talk about a little bit of television, namely my top 15 TV shows of the year. I'm not going to go in depth on everything here. we don't need a half an hour update here, but The Last of Us was not as good as the first season, but it won me over by the end. Am I excited for the next season? Not particularly. Number 14, a brand new animated, adult animated comedy. It's on Crave. I think it's a Crave original, so I don't think you can get it outside of Canada. But it's called Super Team Canada. Kind of a jokey Alpha Flight cartoon, basically. Heavy on the jokey. It's quite funny. It passed the time. I enjoyed it. I'm a sucker for Canadian superheroes and media. All right. How about, there was no new season of Dark Side of the Ring this year, but the production team of that show did Into the Void, Life, Death, and Heavy Metal, a television series, focusing on, various aspects, of heavy metal. They stretch the term heavy metal for this, for sure. But really, the bookends of this series are really like the focal points. The season starts off with a look at Randy Rhoads, of course, Ozzy Osbourne's first solo guitar player, who died tragically very young in an unnecessary plane crash. As in, it was just a joyride. They weren't even going anywhere. Very sad. And then it ends the season with the assassination of Dimebag Darrell. And there's footage in that episode that I've never seen before, that's actually taken of, on stage. You don't actually see it, but you see the people, Very intriguing. Shocking. Anyway, that was Into the Void. That was 13, I guess. 12. I've said this on the podcast before. Stanley Tucci makes everything better. And while I was stealing my son's Disney Plus account, I discovered Tucci in Italy, Stanley Tucci's travel cuisine show. And man, it was just delightful. I really wanted to follow him around and go to where he was going and eat what he was eating. And I would have never watched this, but this came up when we were looking for something to watch, and it was like, you watch Tucci in Italy, so watch No Taste Like Home. And in No Taste Like Home, I don't know the guy's name. He's one of the new Queer Eye guys. And in each episode, he takes like a celebrity and like looks into their past, and then does like a deep dive into cuisine that like connects them to that past, probably the most famous person starts off in episode one is Florence Pugh. James Marsden has a great episode. But here's the real surprising part for me. Awkwafina's episode, I cried at, and I've been, I've made no secret of the fact that I'm not a fan of hers. I find her kind of annoying in movies. But brought me to tears, that one. That was really powerful. So if you have the opportunity to check out No Taste Like Home, I highly recommend it. Number 10 is a series I wasn't actually even planning on watching. I literally just watched this, even though it came out months and months ago. But Gen V Season 2. I wasn't the hugest fan of Gen V Season 1. But then I kept hearing about how important Gen V Season 2 will be for the season finale, or the last season of The Boys. So I was like, oh, okay, I should check it out. And man, I loved it. It's even better than the first season. It's like not even better. It's way better than the first season. I love the character Marie. I love the character of Emma. I'm glad that they're going to be moving forward into The Boys last season. Very interesting. Looking forward to that. Number nine, Hacks, killing it as usual. Just casually dropping, you know, basically the best, you know, comedy, straight comedy series, every year. So kudos to them. Man, talk about a comeback. Love, Death, and Robots had a new season this year, and it was excellent, even with the fact that the last episode was a Red Hot Chili Peppers music video. Anyway, yeah, really great season of that. Really great season of that. Here's something that I kind of stumbled across and really, really ended up enjoying it. I'm talking about Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which is a new animated Spider-Man series. It's set in a world similar to the MCU, but not quite. There's a mystical origin to the Spider-Man powers in this one, which is kind of crazy. And I love the voice acting, and there's a lot of cool obscure villains that pop up. Maybe not obscure, but like classic villains that kind of pop up that you don't really see, you know, in the movies. And yeah, the art kind of has a style of, very sort of Romita vibe. You know, it's fun. It's really, really fun. Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is worth your time, for sure. So number six, I guess, I again have made no secret of the fact that I don't really care about Star Wars, although I have said that Rogue One is my favorite Star Wars movie, and I had enough people tell me that, hey, I know you're not a Star Wars guy, but I think you'd still really like this, and I'm talking about Andor. So it might be a little unfair because I watched both seasons of Andor this year, even though season two was the only one released. However, man, what a great show. It made me rewatch Rogue One. Great show. Powerful show about standing up to fascism, which is something we should all do. And if we don't, then we're part of the problem. Number five, the first... Other than my reference to, oh no, I haven't made that yet. I recorded the podcast thing before I recorded this because I only had a short time to record. Anyway. Some of these are recorded out of sequence. Let's introduce James Gunn to the episode because season two of Peacemaker fucking ruled. It was great. It ended both personally, you know, like sort of like a real personal story, but also it set off, you know, the, you know, firing up the flare for, what's going on earthwise in the MCU or the DCU, James Gunn's universe. Really important way to kick it off at the end of that season. Great season of television. Peacemaker is a great show, but it's only number five. Number four, killer fucking season of Invincible this year. God damn, so good. I hope there's another one next year. Killer. My son and I love watching it together. Great show. Speaking of animated shows, number three, I tried to figure out a million ways to watch this. You know, we got Penguin Weekly when that show came out. We get Peacemaker Weekly when it comes out. But we didn't get Creature Commandos on Crave. Well, it took me forever to find it, but apparently you can watch it for free on the CTV app in Canada. So there you go. If you have a TV connection, which I actually do, which I don't use, but I used it to log into that app. Creature Commandos was a shitload of fun. Absolutely delightful. I love the team. I love the animation style. I love the writing. I love the violence. I love G.I. Robot. We need him now more than ever. Creature Commandos absolutely fucking slays. Good shit. That's number three. My number two and number one were up in the air for a little while, but for number two, I have to go with a television show featuring and created by a guy who is a recent obsession of mine. I'm talking about Tim Robinson. His show, The Chair Company, takes the breaking of an office chair and descends into an insane conspiracy theory, twists and turns, shocking revelations, being thrown back to, you know, to the drawing board, all sorts of wild stuff going on in this show. And it's absolutely fucking hilarious. Tim Robinson's a genius. The Chair Company is one of the best shows of the year. So fucking good, in fact, that the only one that can beat it is, I mean, it's the one everyone's talking about. It, Welcome to Derry. What a great job they did with this show. I was skeptical. You know, I like those movies. And, you know, these are right in that universe. This is very tied to those movies. There's lots of shout-outs to moments in those movies. There's lots of parallels to that movie. Those movies, sorry. But really, the cast is incredible in this show. The effects are fantastic. The scares and the gore and the lore, the backstory. It's really, really, really fucking fun. I couldn't get enough. I was absolutely chomping at the bit for every new episode. So, especially since it's so like horror forward, I gotta call it Welcome to Derry the best show of the year. So, we got a brand new record from legendary political Canadian punk rockers Propagandhi this year, and it rules. And here is the title track from it. And the song is called, and the album is called, At Peace by Propagandhi. We'll come back and talk about some podcasts now.
Hedge every bear, lick every boot, make every appeal. Prostrate yourself to the killing machine, spare yourself from its wheels. Better them than me, roll so seductively off your tongue. Your reckoning has begun.
Oh yeah! I am at peace. Though presently convulsed with grief, I am at peace. Some days I'm scared I'm gonna die, or even worse, I might survive. Try to keep these words in mind. Nothing worth having comes without some kind of fight. Gotta kick in the darkness till it bleeds daylight.
I wanted to shout out this next segment here. You know, my top five podcasts of the year. It's been a bit of a chaotic year, and there's a lot of nice, comfortable junk food, and then there's like good informative shit. But most of this is like nice, comfortable junk food. And that's what I needed this year. So my number five podcast of the year is the podcast of stand-up comedian Jimmy Pardo. I've been listening to it for basically as long as I've been listening to podcasts. I guess fucking 20 years. God damn. Yeah, like 20 years now. And I've been listening to Never Not Funny the whole time. I don't know. I just love it. It's a great crew, and there's laughs every episode, and the guests are always great. Yeah, I just and his kid's funny. I mean, I just I love it. It's so funny that this child who was born while the podcast was being produced is now in college, which is wild. Wild. Anyway. Yeah, we're all getting older. Anyway, Never Not Funny, number five. Kudos to Jimmy Pardo and the guys. Number four, this is the one, looking at my list here. Yeah, the one installment of Informative. And I want to shout out Jesse Brown and Canada Land. Canada Land is a great journalism podcast that focuses mostly on Canada stuff. And if it's anything else, it's how it affects Canada. And part of their mission is to hold, other journalists to account. So they analyze what's going on in the journalism world. And they also highlight stories that, they feel maybe got lost in the shuffle or didn't get enough eyes and ears on. So Canada Land, all one word, is a great, news podcast. Canada, focused. My number three podcast of the year, just when I was getting a little bit tired of Something to Wrestle With, featuring Bruce Pritchard, the former Brother Love from WWE, I guess Bruce quit the podcast or maybe he's just on a long, they talked about it as if, he was on hiatus, and, the fill-in is bragging about stealing his show. So, so I feel that, the Something to Wrestle With podcast really got a shot in the arm and, became a lot more entertaining when the co-host of, who is it? I can't remember his name, the podcast, the wrestling podcast guy. He's married to Ric Flair's daughter. Can't remember his name. He does the What Happened When podcast as well. But, yeah, the fact that JBL or Bradshaw, John Layfield, stepped in and became the, you know, other permanent co-host of this podcast really gave the podcast a shot in the arm and made it more entertaining and really fun, to listen to this past year. So kudos to Bradshaw. Number two, how about a music podcast? I think I've shouted this guy out before, Pat Francis, actually original member of the gang that did the podcast Never Not Funny. That was, again, over a decade ago that was ever a thing with this guy. But this guy started his own podcast about music, and I've been listening to that ever since its inception. It's called Rock Solid. I believe I've mentioned it on this kind of podcast before because I do love it. It's, you know, it's sort of comedy, but it's also music. He has great interviews. Like, almost every episode is an interview with, you know, some guy from like a huge 80s band or whatever, you know? And also like very charming episodes with him and his wife, and his children come on the podcast, and his general crew of co-hosts are fantastic. Pat Francis rules. Rock Solid podcast is really good fun. That's my number two. And my number one, holy shit. We haven't gotten to movies yet, but certainly one of my favorite movies of the year was Superman. I don't think that would be like a huge surprise to anybody that I love that movie. And I don't even know, I might have more episodes left, but Best Movies Never Made did a whole series this past year. Coming back, they came back from hiatus and then did this giant series of unmade Superman movies. Best Movies Never Made is consistently one of my favorite podcasts. But man, their work on all of these Superman movies is just crazy. It ate up hours and hours and hours of podcast time. Just in-depth reading of these scripts and treatments by these guys and their co-hosts. Just fucking amazing. Every year, but specifically, they went hard. I thought they went hard on the unmade Spider-Man stuff, but holy shit, the unmade Superman stuff is just so much more. And Steven Scarlatta is, you know, he's the writer of Jodorowsky's Dune. He's the research guy on this thing. Like, he finds the scripts and stuff and all that. And man, he just did yeoman's work with all this Superman shit. It's just crazy. Just crazy. Just so in depth. All the different kinds of Superman movies they were planning on making. From the beginning till like up till recently, essentially. Just amazing. Great work, guys. Best Movies Never Made. Oh. I'd like to see their look at the unmade G.I. Joe stuff. How about that transition? Because one of the craziest albums of the year was from a band called Cold Slither. Now, Cold Slither features the guys from Gruesome, which is in itself a death tribute band. Or death homage band. But they dialed the death metal back and made a nice hard rock record portraying the characters of the Dreadnoks from G.I. Joe as they performed as the Cobra metal band that was going to brainwash the youth of America, Cold Slither. And the Gruesome guys got together and did this, of course, like, I don't know, in conjunction with like Hasbro and shit. Like, it's fucked up. It's so crazy. I still want to buy this on vinyl, but I bought it on digital, and here it is. It's fucking awesome. Cold Slither by Cold Slither. We'll come back and talk about some comic books.
For Cold Slither, you'll be joining us soon. Damn the Vipers, play it on tune. But I am best, in a reptile fist, we shall rule.
speaking of G.I. Joe, I'm here to talk about some comics. Shout out to G.I. Joe. There is both the ongoing Larry Hama series, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. And then there's also the G.I. Joe series that is also in the same universe as Transformers and Void Rivals, which has also had a decent year. Much of that was done in 2024, though. I'm a little behind on my shit, so I can't say that for certain. So they're not an entry on my top six comic books of the year. Just like comic book stuff, you know, come on, comic book stuff. I want to give a shout out to a one shot that I'm kind of bummed was a one shot. It's called Freddy the Fix by Garth Ennis and Mike Perkins, about a guy. Is it in Hollywood? I think so. Yeah. A guy in Hollywood who is a fixer for supernatural folks who get in trouble. Like a client of his who becomes a werewolf and ends up tearing somebody apart unintentionally. And so they have to deal with that kind of thing. Really good. I really wish it was a series, you know. As it stands as the one shot, it was really good. It was very novel, like novella-istic, not novelistic, but novella-istic. It was very much like a novella. It was very, very good. And the art was excellent. Mike Perkins is great. I've loved his work for years. And, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last time I read some Garth Ennis stuff, but it's good to hear to see that he's doing some good shit again. It's very good. I want to give a shout out to Matt Fraction and Jorge Jimenez, who are the creative team on Batman. This new Batman series is really, really fun. Really fun, really cool. The art is great. The character redesigns are great. The stories are great. The action is really, really very fun. There's also a lot of cool, like Batman nerd, shit with there'll be like a tab that not pops up, but you know, it's up on the screen giving you schematics of, you know, like the Bat Cycle or whatever, when you see it on the page, you know, very modern feeling, but also like really also, focusing on the classic elements of what makes Batman great, including using this, gray and blue combo with the costume is just, chef's kiss. I want to shout out, DC Horror Presents Creature Commandos. That's, written by David Dastmalchian. Right, he played the Polka Dot Man. Is that his name? The Polka Dot Man? I'm blanking on that. Anyway, it's drawn by Jesus Hervás. I think that's how you'd pronounce it. A really fun story. A really fun team, you know? I'd be interested in... I don't know. We need to establish a solid DC universe, and then we can release an actual ongoing series of Creature Commando. Come on, let's go. I'll write it. Number 3, Bloody Gore Comics Anthology Volume 4. A lot of fun. Good indie anthology. Nice giant slab of creepy, disturbing, weird, splatstick, violent, depraved stuff. Really fun. Really fun. I supported the Kickstarter to get this done. And also, I'll say the same for the first 3. having read all four of them now. Really great, you know, like weird comics slash horror anthology stuff over there. Bloody Gore Comics. Check it out. The great Josh Simmons returns to this list. This time he released, I guess technically the first issue, Annihilator number one, a sort of, Punisher, pastiche satire of super violent comics by my, you know, new favorite, cartoonist, like of all time. It's really, really awesome. I got the deluxe hardcover where I could see it in, you know, colors and then just inks and then just pencils. Holy shit. The detail on this stuff just in pencils is crazy. Crazy, 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 crazy. What a talent. I love Josh Simmons. Annihilator number one is really, really cool. There's, you know, more affordable versions of it. And I really look forward to Annihilator number two, maybe in 2026. And then, I think there's some weird overlap. So I think that, well, I guess Skin Police was probably fully last year, but Skin Police 2 is this year. And man, just the coolest, creepiest, weirdest, you know, like Cronenbergian body horror, but with a really big sci-fi spectacle budget. It's really, really cool in a comic book, you know? It's violent, it's creepy, it's weird, it's creepy crawly, it's got like ethical implications and shit. Man, Skin Police is really good. I really hope they release like a, doesn't have to be a hardcover, but just like a collection that collects both miniseries. I would really dig that a lot. Because I would grab that. I don't know if I'll buy them separately in trade. I read them in issues. But anyway. Good shit. Anyway, that's my favorite comics of the year. I'm still really behind on comics. So as far as like the monthly comics goes, I'm not caught up on that. I got to start on the recent thing of, not the most recent, but the last most recent thing of X-Men, and they've already switched on me, and I'm not caught up to that switch yet. So, man, that shit moves quick. And also, I just don't have a lot of time to read comics. So, I don't have a lot of time to read shit. But, yeah, those are some of the comics that really made me go, oh, goddamn, this is good shit. This year. So there you go. Let's play another Canadian band, but this time the sort of, I don't know what these guys are, like sort of like dark, sort of gothy radio rock. Finger 11. The record they released this year is titled Last Night on Earth. And this is a really kick-ass song with a really big chorus. This is Laughing at the Storm by Finger 11. And we'll come back and talk about some releases this year.
But I'm not leaving here till the hurricane's gone. I've been laughing at the storm. Always knew that it would come, but I'm not going anywhere till the end has begun. So the struggle in front of me, and it's tearing up the skyline. Now it's getting tough to see. Clouds are blocking out the sunlight. There's trouble in front of me, and it's messing up my timeline. I've waited half my life, it seems, to feel something fully realized from the big sky. Here comes the carnival. I've been laughing at the storm for one rainy day too long, but I'm not leaving here till the hurricane's gone. I've been laughing at the storm. Always knew that it would come, but I'm not going anywhere.
So this releases category is really for the stuff that doesn't fit the other categories properly. Like, for example, this entry, the train wreck documentaries. So when did that come out? Yeah, I was going to say 2022. There was a 3-episode documentary on Netflix called Trainwreck Woodstock 99. I believe that was one of actually 2 separate Woodstock documentaries that year released on Netflix as well. Maybe this was the only one that was actually a Netflix production, but anyway, I watched that and that was very good. Anyway, here we are 3 years later, and throughout June and July of 2025, they released, hold on, 9, because one of them was 2 episodes, Trainwreck documentaries on Netflix, and man, they were really good. So, the first one was, the Astro World tragedy. That's an 80-minute documentary feature about the Travis Scott festival tragedy where all those people got crushed. Then there's Trainwreck Mayor of Mayhem, which is a 49-minute documentary about the mayor, the mayorship of Rob Ford. Then there's Trainwreck Poop Cruise, a 55-minute doc of the breakdown in 2013 of the Carnival Triumph cruise ship. Pretty gross. And then there's Trainwreck, The Cult of American Apparel. I had no idea about this one either. I didn't know about the Poop Cruise one either. But this is about, like, the guy who created American Apparel was, like, a real sex pest kind of thing. That's a 54-minute documentary. This one's crazy. So this one, Trainwreck, The Real Project X, is a 48-minute documentary about a teenage Dutch girl accidentally opening up, making her birthday party. She was going to have a little birthday party with a few friends, and she made the event public. And then, like, thousands of people showed up and created mayhem in this small Dutch town. And it was very similar to the party in the movie Project X. So it's called The Real Project X. Then there's Trainwreck Balloon Boy. Remember that? I certainly didn't until I saw this documentary on Netflix as a selection. I'm like, oh yeah, Balloon Boy. I forgot about Balloon Boy. That was fun. That's a 52-minute doc. Then there's Trainwreck PI Moms. I also did not know about this whole thing. A 45-minute thing about these moms who do private investigation on the side and how they were, like, exploited by their manager or whatever. That one's, like, the one where I was like, meh, whatever, you know, that wasn't that good. But the last one is a two-part thing about Trainwreck Storm Area 51. And this is about the guy who created the Storm Area 51 movement and the music festival they tried to set up out there. It's an absolute fucking complete debacle. What a great story. What a great release. I really enjoyed it. You know, I wouldn't put any of these on my, you know, as a best documentary, because there's only one that's a feature documentary. But, yeah, it wouldn't count, so I can't put that on my movies. Or, I guess I could put it in the new documentary section, but I'm not doing that. Another release I'm really happy about this year is The Furry Trap by the previously mentioned Josh Simmons. This is a reprint of The Furry Trap, which is a just an anthology compilation of a bunch of, you know, his, like, just, like, you know, nihilistic cartoons, like he does, you know. So, I mean, the story here is that, you know, a couple years ago, I bought, Flayed Corpse, another collection of Josh Simmons cartooning, and, fell in love with it. Absolutely. I think that's a masterpiece of weird horror existential comics, and I immediately had to have, like, everything I could get my hands on that had Josh Simmons in it. And so I did. I got House, I got all this stuff, Mark of the Bat, I got all this stuff, you know. But The Furry Trap was always so expensive on eBay, you know. It's just like unaffordable, and you know, I just couldn't find it for, you know, for any cheaper. So I just sort of stayed away from that one. And then boom, Mansion Press, this French publishing company, which has been doing his stuff for quite a while now, released a reprint of it. So I'm very, very happy for that. There's a vinyl box set of Monster Magnet, their second through fifth albums. They're, you know, their classic era. It's fucking excellent. I did an unboxing video of it. It's over on the Patreon. You can check that out over at patreon.com/dreadmedia. And then there were a bunch of music releases that I'll just like, you know, run through. There were two singles released this year that I enjoyed. Into the Cesspool by Dying Fetus, and Make the Demons Obey by Hatebreed kicks so much ass. And then a bunch of EPs. Broken Sword, Rotten Shield by Full of Hell. Taylor Momsen's Pretty Reckless Christmas by The Pretty Reckless. Yeah, it's a Christmas EP. I like it. I love her voice. I think she's great. And then, yeah, and then she came out and sang Rusty Cage at that, that was the Hall of Fame, right? Sang that, in honor of Chris Cornell. Holy shit. She rules. Neon Gods, Own Your Darkness, by Igor Cavalera and Shane Embry. So Igor Cavalera of Sepultura and Shane Embry of Napalm Death have this, I don't know what this is. I call it an EP. It's two tracks, but they're both like closing in on 20 minutes long. So I can't really play it for you because they're really long, but it's good shit. Creative shit. Black Star by Candlemass has a good cover of a great cover of Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath on there. R.I.P. Ozzy. Struck Dead, a Trivium EP, kicks ass. Return of Gorgor, Gwar EP, a mix, a couple new tracks and some live tracks. Great live version of America Must Be Destroyed. Bloody Hammers put out their own acoustic Halloween special. Speaking of Halloween specials, Unto Others put out, I Believe in Halloween 2. Panopticon, on top of releasing an album this year, also released an EP called The Poppies Bloom for No King. This EP actually has some black metal on it. His other album is like straight full-on Americana. It's crazy. It was kind of shocking. It took that long, I guess, 10 years or so. Amun-Ra put out two EPs this year, With Fang and Claw and Detourne. I think that's Dutch. I don't know what that means. Melvins put out an EP this year called Thunderball. Kicks ass. But really, my highlight, for releases like this is, Relapse Records has released, it's them releasing, but it is re-releases of perhaps the entire, Lip Cream catalog. Lip Cream was a Japanese hardcore punk band. I read about them, and then, hot older punk chick I knew gave me a mixtape that had, their song Terror on it. And, it was fun. And then I ended up reading about them in a couple articles, but I've never really listened to them entirely. But like Relapse dropped a bunch of EPs and albums by, Lip Cream. And I've been wading my way through it. It's some really fun hardcore punk. For me, a real focal point of the release so far, I haven't been able to like give it like in all of my attention, but I think like the release that really gets me is, the album that has, Terror on it. Also, Cold Lover, another good song of theirs. But this is my song that I'm going to play for you guys. This is R.I.P. Off. It's by the band Lip Cream, and at 2 minutes long, it's the longest track on Lip Cream's album, Nine Shocks Terror. And then we'll come back and talk about some movies. It's movie time, baby. Time to talk about my top 20 movies of 2025. And I'm going to break my own rule here, and I'm going to start with a tie. Number 20 is a tie. It's a Frankenstein movie and a vampire movie. In fact, it is first Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. A beautiful looking film. But, you know, it was really nothing new. There were a couple cool elements. I really liked the Victor Frankenstein at the university showing off the beating heart of the corpse there as it's reacting. That was really cool to me. But anything else was, kind of sort of bog standard, I think. But it was beautiful and it was well acted. Got my girl Mia Goth in there. Yeah, solid movie, but, you know, I think maybe a little overrated. Brand new release this year, Landlord. Yes, vampires are not allowed to enter your premises without being invited, but what if they're your landlord and they already own it? Yikes. Good shit. Really fun movie. Came out of nowhere, got the opportunity to get the screener and interview the director and just, yeah, I had a really good time doing it. So there you go. Number 19 was the last of the 2025 movies I watched before, compiling or finalizing my list here, I guess. And, it is Death of a Unicorn. Man, if I'm not mistaken, I would guess that this movie was actually filmed a few years ago and then they were wondering what the fuck they had. And then all of a sudden, a couple years later, both Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega are some of the most bankable movie stars around. And they're like, oh, we have this crazy piece of shit to put out. And you know what? It is crazy. It's really, really fun. Death of a Unicorn. I had a hell of a lot of fun watching this movie. You know, that's what movies are about for me. They're fun. Fuck yeah. Death of a Unicorn ruled.
I don't know if anybody else has seen it, but really fun movie. Number 18, talk about fun movies. A remake of The Toxic Avenger by Macon Blair. It was really fun. Maybe a little too digital for my liking, but I think it was an appropriate homage to the series. I thought it was fun. I thought Peter Dinklage was great. I thought the tiny Portuguese woman who wore the costume of Toxie in the movie was also great. Crazy cast, Elijah Wood and whatnot. Really fantastic. I had a lot of fun with the Toxic Avenger remake. I'm glad they finally released it. I think maybe like the studio deciding not to release it may have just been like a PR ploy. And if so, hey, it worked. But I'm glad I got to see it. So there you go. Now it's on like Paramount Plus, right? Isn't it? Is that where I watched it? I can't remember. Next movie is a movie I got to watch through the Amazing Fantasy Film Festival. This one was right up my alley. Straight up like Six String Samurai vibes. Weird esotericism. I'm talking about Astral Plane Drifter. Just a hell of a lot of fun at the movies. After that, we get Jeffrey Rush and John Lithgow as two inhabitants of an old folks home, retirement home, is that what it is? Like a care home, there you go. John Lithgow gets to flex his villain muscle as the incredibly creepy villain of this movie. Worth it for watching for that alone. Jeffrey Rush is great. And also, as I said in my review and got some feedback from the PR person of, you know, someone who does like elder care, writes about elder care, like it's cool to see, you know, this demographic being served by independent horror. You know, it's really cool. And John Lithgow just like nailing the part. Jeffrey Rush just nailing the part. So good, so good. The Rule of Jenny Penn. Don't let that one slip by you. Next up, I may have lied about, no, this was, I watched this before Death of a Unicorn. A couple years ago, I read the novella this movie was based on, and you know what? It did nothing for me, to be honest. Really, really. In that whole collection, that was the one thing I did not care for in that Stephen King book. I can't remember. Was that in Just Before Sunset or something? Is that what it was? I can't remember. But The Life of Chuck made out to be a really, really excellent, life-affirming, kind of positive movie. And it's kind of nice to have that because you need that sometimes. Even still, it's got Tom Hiddleston and I didn't mind. He doesn't really have much to do. It's actually really great. The kid who played like middle school Tom Hiddleston character, middle school Chuck, fantastic. Really great cast. Mia Sara plays a grandmother. I'm dying of old age. The gorgeous Mia Sara from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Playing Chuck's grandmother. Goodness. What a great movie. I don't know. I must have been in a mood when I read the story. The Life of Chuck. Next up, the town of Eddington goes to hell when the mayor and the sheriff have a disagreement about COVID restrictions. Violent, really fun. This is Ari Aster, right? Yeah. Yeah, great movie. This was on my list of movies that I really wanted to see. Glad I watched it. great performances. Although I have to say, you're going to see this a couple times this year and maybe going forward, but it really feels like a lot of modern, movies that are going to get a look at award time, prestige drama, maybe feels a little aimless these days. I'm just going to say that. It feels a little aimless. Like it could like, you know, do a little better to get to the point, but still, Eddington was a great watch. Superman. One of two movies I saw in the theater this year. Yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me about 10 heroes I'd like to see in James Gunn's DCU universe, movies going forward, I don't know if I would have, picked Mr. Terrific. I may have if it was 20, but man, I'm really glad that he's in that show. Hawk Girl, I didn't necessarily give a shit about either. But she's played by that chick in The Last of Us, who I also thought was great in The Last of Us. I really like her, so I'm glad that she's in it. Of course, we got, Nathan, man, this is off the dome. I can't remember his name. You know who I'm talking about. As, Guy Gardner, really fun. I thought David Corenswet was great as Superman. I thought Lex Luthor was great. I thought Crypto was great. I'm really looking forward to Supergirl. I'm really jazzed on this, DC movie universe, already. And hopefully this, merger talk doesn't fuck everything up. But, yeah, Superman was, a really great movie. Nice, hopeful Superman. We need that. Next up is a movie I think that came out like in January of 2025, but man, it's just so chock full of pulpy horror, 80s paperback goodness that I could not exclude The Gorge. Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy, play an American and Soviet, sharpshooter, tasked with guarding the gorge from the creatures that crawl from within. Really fun movie. Holy shit. Really, really good. I dug it a lot. Next up. Oh, the lead actor of this movie just won, an award at a genre film festival. And I'm talking about Indy, who played himself, Indy, in Good Boy. The first horror film told from the perspective of the dog. My chair's cracking. My chair's breaking on me. Oh no, the chair company. I loved Good Boy. What a fantastic movie. Last year, right? Was last year In a Violent Nature when we got the, you know, the, follow around the killer in a slasher movie? POV sort of look. This is the year where, two movies on my list exploit that. And this was the first one. Good Boy. Good shit. Good Boy. Good shit. Speaking of dogs, we're going to move over to Wolves. Greg Lamberson's Frenzy Moon. Finally, man, I've been talking about werewolves with Greg Lamberson for ages. We're both old school werewolf fans, as you know from our episode featuring all those werewolf movies of the 84. Man, he really created something special with this. What a great movie. Frenzy Moon kicks fucking ass. The werewolf looks great. Try not to spoil anything. When you got the opportunity, check it out. How about One Battle After Another? This was already on my list, but DZ shared a video with me of that David Pargin guy. Is that, that's the guy who wrote, oh no. Someone dies at the end. Dave dies at the end. What's the name of that movie? book. He wrote the book. Anyway. But yeah, he points out that one battle after another is basically Terminator 2, which is insane, but it's such a really, really fun movie. And just like, ugh, Benicio del Toro, come on. Sean Penn's great. Leonardo DiCaprio's great. What a really, really fun movie. And again, a movie about resistance to oppression. Good shit. Check out One Battle After Another. It's funny. I did not expect it to be as funny as it was. I laughed my ass off. Speaking of laughing my ass off, Honey Don't. Good Lord. Margaret Qualley. She could tell me to eat a wine glass and I'd be like, yeah, sure, okay. This sort of noir detective story, Margaret Qualley is a private detective. Her client ends up dead, so she starts investigating her client's death instead of what her client wanted her to investigate. Charlie Day is in it. He's great. Aubrey Plaza is in it. She's great. It's just a really fantastic movie. Don't let that fly under the radar. Honey Don't rules. Seven? Yeah. Seven is a movie I reviewed with Dwayne on this podcast called Property. Ooh, so good. Where the farm workers rise up and, overthrow the owner of this farm, and try and kill him and his wife, but his wife is safe inside the super reinforced, highly technologically, strengthened security vehicle, that they came in. And it's kind of this sort of interesting, I don't know, I almost said cat and mouse, not really. It's about these, farm workers trying to figure out how to crack open this egg and get that woman out. It's very, very interesting. Really good potboiler shit. Property. If you haven't seen that, don't let that fall under the radar. Property rules. Next up, another movie that I watched in my scramble to watch a bunch of 2025 films. Companion. I thought I knew what this movie would be like going in, but boy, was that turned on its head for me. I did not expect that. I thought it was clever. I thought it was a really great take on this story. It's like the secondary story, right? It's like the second best idea. You know, you get the first best idea and then yeah. And then, okay, so you're working on that. You're working on that. And then you're like, wait a second, but what if this? And that's what makes Companion rise above what you might expect a film of this sub genre to do. I don't want to say much more about it because I want people to watch Companion. I think it's a great movie. Great movie. All right, we're here for the top five. The top five movies of the year. And this should come as no surprise. Sinners, Ryan Coogler's Sinners. What a fucking great movie. Just top to bottom, absolutely fantastic genre filmmaking. Beautiful, really novelistic and, extremely well acted. Very stylish, great music. Man, what a fucking awesome movie. Sinners rules. Number four. Again, no surprise to anybody, but Weapons. Number four movie of the year. Just absolutely great. Super well acted. Love the Rashomon-style storytelling. A couple of shocking images. Really cool villain. Yeah, it's got everything. Really fun. Really fun. Number three, Let's Get Weird. Tim Robinson rears his ugly head once again with Friendship. Him and Paul Rudd. I think Paul Rudd does the performance of his career in this movie. I think it's incredible. What he's doing is like working on so many different fucking levels. It's crazy. And Tim Robinson imbues this movie with his own completely pure insanity. It's just absolutely delightful. I love friendship. You know, at its heart, this movie is about the loneliness of men, I think. But it becomes so much more, a true, tragedy of errors. So, so good. Friendship rules. Number three movie of the year. Number two movie of the year is another one of these POV movies. We've talked about Good Boy already. But, man, I saw this early in the year and it stuck with me ever since. I'm talking about Presence, the haunted house movie filmed from the POV of the presence that is haunting the house. It's one of those 30 days of night. Holy shit. How come someone hasn't figured this out before? Ideas. And, it's done just so fucking excellently. Just excellently. Great cast, great director, Presence. Goddamn, Presence is so good. Bringing us to the number one film of the year here at Dread Media. I reacted viscerally to one scene in particular in this movie so loudly that my stepdaughter came in from the other room asking if I was okay. But man, in this cleanup to watch as many 2025 films as I possibly could, I knew I had to watch this one just based on the snippets of what I've heard other people saying. And holy shit, that did not disappoint. But Bring Her Back is one of the most intense and brutal horror movies of the year. Is it Philippou? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Philippou brothers, who directed Talk to Me from a couple years ago. Again, that was one of my favorite movies that year. Maybe not my favorite, but really a high up, I'm sure. I love that movie. Hell, maybe it was the number one. I'm not sure. But Bring Her Back is another great villain, true cruelty, really great acting. Oh my God, the noise, the scene that bothered me. You know what I know. You know what it is, probably. If you know me and you've seen the movie, you know what scene bothered me. Just the sound, man. The fucking sound. Anyway, that's the top 20 movies of the year. Let's get out of here with, man, I did not see this collaboration coming. Mike Patton has done collaborations before with the Executioners. He sang on, he did vocals on the Dillinger Escape Plan EP. So, you know, a lot of his projects are actually, collaborations. Some of them are him orchestrating this and everyone doing the work, but some of them are true collaborations, and this is one of those. I did not expect this. This was not on my 2025 bingo card, but they announced this and released this in short order this year, and I'm talking about Avett Patton. Mike Patton collaborating with the Avett brothers, or the Avett? Is it Avett brothers? Avett Patton? I'm not sure. Sort of an Americana duo, and I'm playing this song from the record. Yes, it's one of the opening I don't know if it's singles, but it's one of the songs that they performed on TV. They've done several televised performances, this trio, and it's really great hearing Mike Patton's voice crooning alongside these two country dudes. This is a song that includes the word dread. So let's listen to Eternal Love by the Avett Brothers and Mike Patton.
Every day and every dark night, So how do I speak without lying?
Every birth is the ending,
and every life is dying.
Here in the spaces, here in the shadows, behind the faces, beneath the souls. Everyone has it, everyone knows
the dread of eternal love.
I take my pills, I drink my drinks, I never stop wondering what people think.
Hiding humility by never arriving, I wax the Mercedes, I dream about driving.
Here in the country, up in the air, out on the streets, everywhere. Everyone has it, everyone knows the dread of eternal love. Dread of eternal
love. Paint gets peeled off, the paint gets put on, we take off the best suit that we have donned.
We walk to the ocean, full of ourselves,
and she takes our soul from its shell.
She takes us. She takes us.
In the spaces, here in the shadows, behind the faces, we need the souls.
I take my pills, I drink my drinks, forever concerned with what you think.
Down in the valley, up in the air, in San Francisco, everywhere. Everyone has it, everyone knows the dread. Eternal love. The dread of eternal love. The dread of eternal love.
And we're back for the first time ever. With a brand new, I mean, it's not the first time ever we've had a brand new category, but, you know, things, releases, and things I'm looking forward to, those are all brand new categories at some point. There were enough documentaries that I enjoyed that I could turn, you know, I don't like to go more than 20 movies, so I could have easily made 25, but I had 22, and then I was like, you know what? Then I'm going to add the documentaries that, you know, I also liked. So here we go. John Candy, I Like Me. Colin Hanks and Ryan Reynolds came together to make this movie honoring Canadian comedy legend John Candy. Absolutely great. Good stuff. I wanted more, actually. I wanted more from this one. It's number 5. Number 4. This is a two-part feature documentary. The first of two-part feature documentaries. And by that I mean both parts are feature length. About a cultural figure that came out this year that are on this list. The first, number 4, a.k.a. Charlie Sheen. Say what you want about Charlie Sheen. His life has been incredibly interesting. And this, two-part documentary really goes for it. Ironically and appropriately, the second part of the documentary is called Part Deux, right? There you go. AKA Charlie Sheen on Netflix. Number three documentary of the year, Chain Reactions. Cultural figures, in in-depth interviews, discuss the importance of the Texas Chain Saw Massacre film. Great documentary. Here's the other two-part cultural figure documentary series. Pee-wee himself, the Pee-wee Herman documentary. Fascinating. Such a big personality. Tried to take over. He wanted to be there asking questions of the people that the director wanted to interview about Pee-wee, about Paul Rubens and about Pee-wee Herman. The director's like, no, we're not doing that. Absolutely loved it. I miss Pee-wee Herman. For sure. But the number one documentary of the year, also Netflix? Yes, also Netflix. Wow, what a chilling doc. This story of this woman who was frustrated with these kids playing on property that didn't belong to her. It was like communal property. And the kids are playing and she just hated it. She's like 100% Karen. And something like, I think she stole one of the kids' iPads or whatever. And the kid went home, told his mom, and his mom went over and she shot the kid's mom and killed her. And all this whole documentary is told through there's a little bit of like news footage, as any of these documentaries will have, but everything else is told by, you know, like the police camera that they have, whatever, what are those called? Whatever cams? Jesus Christ. Escaping my mind. Incredibly sobering. Has one of the, you know, it feels like we're in the era of a ton of documentaries. Maybe just because with streaming, we seem to have more access to documentaries than we did in the past, because they wouldn't really play on television. And, you know, you had to have a big market if you were going to go see a documentary in the theater, for example, you know, unless it was massive, unless it was like Bowling for Columbine or something, like a huge cultural phenomenon or something, or Fahrenheit 9/11. I think that's what I meant to say. That's what I saw in theater. Yeah, this, like the streaming era, you know, I think like we get a lot of documentaries, and this one stands out because it's told solely through the footage. Like, you just see it. And, there are so many documentaries these days that, you know, it's rare to find a documentary with a moment of real, truth. You know, like where you watch something, you're just like, wow. You know, you don't see that a lot these days. And this one has it for sure. There's a moment where someone has to tell the kids that the mom is dead, you know, and that's wow. Yeah. Crazy. And then you just see it from the lapel camera. What the fuck are those called? Jesus. Oh, anyway. The Perfect Neighbor, best documentary of the year. Speaking of documentary, they're about truth. So let's play a song from, I don't know how to pronounce this record's title. Alunia? Alunea. Not sure how to pronounce that. A-L-U-N-E-A by the extreme metal band Kardashev. Incredible vocals,
Just like this album is all over the place. Tons of shit to listen to. So let's check it out. Truth to Form by Kardashev.
I'm a wizard to you.
back to talk about my six favorite things of the year. Things is another category that's a catch-all for things that don't actually fit other things. Now, this is actually could include, you know, movies, television, content released outside of the year 2025. Like, for example, I am one season into a rewatch of Star Trek, the original series. So there's that. And it could be, you know, things that don't really count as, well, I guess maybe it sort of counts as television shows, but I'm not counting it as it. But, WWE was on Netflix beginning in January of 2025. And I watched, Raw and SmackDown and the WWE PLEs related to it throughout this year. I would say it was a tumultuous year for WWE. Injuries waylaid a lot of plans, it feels. There was a lot of poor decision-making and booking, I will say. The John Cena retirement tour was weird. There was the whole heel turn, which I thought was kind of brilliant, and then no more than a few weeks later they just walk it back. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do in 2026 without John Cena. The John Cena retirement tour, which was a draw both for views online as well as selling out shows. It was one of, you know, Cena's last shows. Boom, they'll sell that arena out. They did. They just did a shitty job booking his tour. And I guess you got to put a little bit of the blame on him. There were a couple great matches, though. He did have a couple great matches. I'll be interested to see how WWE handles things in 2026, for sure. Could also include YouTube stuff. Dark web is a thing that I really started enjoying this year. I think it just started this year. Dark web is the YouTube channel show by Paul Scheer and Rob Hubel. Now, I'm used to listening to Paul Scheer on the How Did This Get Made podcast, where he is essentially the straight man. But it's great to see him wildly out of control with Rob Hubel as a straight man of Dark Web. And also Rob Hubel is also playing the fool. So a lot of fun. It's a reaction series. They watch weird internet clips and, have a hilarious time at it. And it brought me a lot of joy in 2025. And I will continue to watch it in 2026. Bryce is Right. I think I mentioned him last year in this section, this category. Still great videos all year long. Thank you, Bryce. Yeah, I took part as a, I don't know, judge slash programmer. I don't know what my actual title was, but for the Amazing Fantasy Film Festival, had a lot of fun doing so. Really looking forward to continuing doing that into 2026 for the next Amazing Fantasy Film Festival. And then I guess the last thing I want to bring up is the concerts I attended this year. There was Nine Inch Nails. That was great. With Boys Noize opening up, a DJ named Boys Noize. Is that right? Boys Noize? That's off the top of my head. I saw The Refused on their retirement tour. Quicksand opened up, as well as Actors, I think a Vancouver band, Actors. Very goth rock, very cool, actually. I enjoyed them, too. saw Mandy Patinkin. Was that in Seattle? I think so. Yeah, it was in Seattle. Yeah. That was great, seeing him doing show tunes and shit and talking and performing. Really great. Really great. That was fun. Saw that with Stacy. We're both big Mandy Patinkin fans. And a much smaller scale, but Vancouver guys, Opal in Sky. These guys came out with a couple other bands. Nameless King. Man, it's all off the top of my head. I don't think I can get any of the other names. But it was a great show locally here in Port Alberni. Opal in Sky is a great, like, Vancouver-based metalcore band. Is that what they are? But they have two singers, and they're twins? Or maybe brothers? I think they're twins. And it's great because, like, there's these bands, like a band like Avenged Sevenfold. On album, they sound great, but they have trouble recreating it. And part of that is because a lot of Amashadow's vocal lines, he says the vocal line, but the next vocal line is him being patched in recording, beginning the next vocal line before before the previous vocal line completely ends. You know what I mean? So it's something that's completely impossible to recreate. And then to do it effectively, it requires a lot of breath. It's one of those kind of bad things. But when you have two guys that can sound exactly the same going back and forth, you can have that bleed over. So it sounds like the record when they're playing it live. And it did. I bought their CD. I bought some patches. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Opal in Sky. Check them out. Opal in Sky. All right. Another almost thing, but it's also a record, one of my favorite records of the year, was a Ministry record, but it's not really, it's a record, I guess. It's Ministry and the Squirrely Years. So Ministry really took off with their, The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste and Land of Rape and Honey. Those are their third and fourth records. In fact, it may be the other way around, but still third and fourth. And and that is, you know, what we consider, like basically the beginning of industrial music in a lot of ways. From that, we get Nine Inch Nails going forward, you know, all the others, you know, and there's also Skinny Puppy at the time, but really, like, as far as popularity, like, kicking the door down, that third and fourth Ministry record is like, wow. But the first two Ministry records are basically synth pop records, and they're albums that Al Jurgensen, who, let's face it, is Ministry, has hated, denigrated, talked poorly about, tried to forget for a very, very long time. But I feel like it maybe started in 2024. One of my regrets is not being able to see Ministry perform these first two records of theirs live. I had the chance, couldn't make it happen. It's another thing where it's like in Vancouver, which is a ferry ride away for me, that I, you know, will have to spend the night, and it's in the middle of the week, so then I have to take a day off work, which is, a lot of money to throw away. But I really wanted to, check out that show because, there are a lot of really great tunes, and The Squirrely Years is a re-recorded version of those two albums back to back in one record, with a little bit more of like the modern Ministry snarl to it.
So, it's a really great release because I'm a fan of those original two records. Within Temptation. No, I'm gonna fail trying to remember the names of the records, but it doesn't matter because you can grab the squirrely ears and you got them with a more, you know, slightly edgier, real Ministry feel. And I'm gonna play a great song from the squirrely ears. And that's Revenge by Ministry. To the category of what I'm most looking forward to in 2026. I'm going to reiterate some things from last year that haven't come yet. Star Trek Prodigy Season 2. When is that streaming in Canada? Let's get that happening, please. Yeah, I guess I should say I'm looking forward to Starfleet Academy, which starts like in a few days, less than a week. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope they, you know, do something cool. I'm looking forward to Paul Giamatti as a villain in Star Trek. That's cool. Looking forward to that. I hope this show works out. I hope it's better than the last season of Strange New Worlds. I'll tell you that much. Still looking forward to those Clive Barker novels, boy. you know what I'm looking forward to? I've actually pre-ordered Volume 1. I'm looking forward to, again, this is Fantagraphics, right? Hold on. Yeah, it's Fantagraphics. I guess, obviously in conjunction, you know, with Marvel Comics. The Marvel Creator Collection, number 1, Back to the Savage Land, Barry Windsor Smith at Marvel, Volume 1. There's 2 Volume 1s in that title. Look, my comic book artist Mount Rushmore is probably Jack Kirby, Gene Colan, Alan Davis, and Barry Windsor Smith. This is the first of a 3-volume collection of Barry Windsor Smith's non-Conan work. This first volume has Kazar, Doctor Strange, Nick Fury, and maybe a little Avengers? Is that what that is? Yeah. Pre-Conan work. Oh, yeah. X-Men, Avengers, Doctor Strange, and Iron Man. Oh, that's the whole collection. Anyway, whatever. Huge Kazar story, a lot of other stuff. This is good, good shit. I really hope that it sort of includes the Uncanny X-Men stuff that he's done. I'm not sure that it will. But it looks like it'll collect Weapon X, which, whatever, I've already got like two versions of that, but whatever. But Barry Windsor Smith is one of the greats, and I'm really looking forward to this collection. Really looking forward to see who they choose for next after they do these 3 volumes. Who's the next Marvel creator collection, you know? Is it, you know, someone else of this generation? Is it, you know, one of the Filipino guys, for example, Ernie Chan or something? Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see who they announce next. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. Boom. New records. You know, we, again, RIP Brent Hines, but we lost him. There's not going to be any more. There's not going to be any reconciliation between Brent Hines and Mastodon because he is now gone. But I believe Mastodon will be putting out a record this year. I'm looking forward to see what that looks like. Very intrigued. You know, very soon coming out must be the final Megadeth record. That has me interested. There's a brand new record by Hoaxxed coming out just in a couple weeks as well. I'm not really sure about who else is putting records out this year. But, yeah, those are the ones that have got me excited right now. Haven't talked about the concerts I'm going to. I've got, just 2, tickets purchased thus far. Next month, I'm going to see Megadeth on their retirement tour. Look, I know you can say a whole bunch of stuff about Dave Mustaine, but nobody on his level is taking 2 other, you know, classic thrash bands, Anthrax and Exodus, and doing a cross Canada tour, a true cross Canada tour, not Montreal, Toronto, and maybe Vancouver. I'm talking all the way across Canada in the middle of fucking winter
but Megadeth. So that's really fucking cool. And also I'm going to see Goldfinger in Vancouver in April. So I haven't seen Goldfinger since, actually I can't remember. I know they opened for the Sex Pistols on the Filthy Lucre tour, but I swear I saw them on a Warped tour as well. I just can't remember if it was before that or after that. I'm going to guess after that, but yeah, there you go. All right. That's what I'm looking forward to. Oh yeah, movies. Yeah, I suppose I'm excited for, what, Avengers Doomsday? Is that what it's called? Excited / trepidatious, you know. I don't like the idea of, you know, Robert Downey Jr. being Dr. Doom. Maybe I'm the only person who doesn't, but that doesn't excite me. Still, I'm very intrigued by that movie. Mostly because I want to see James Marsden as Cyclops carrying forward into this new, you know, MCU or whatever. I think an older Cyclops leading a younger team would be great. Be great. Anyway. That's it. Yeah, let's get out of here with a brand new song by the, Black and Roll outfit, Midnight. This is I'm Insane. Friends, and thank you for joining me in episode 951, our best of 2025 spectacular. 2025 has been a crazy year for Dread Media, for me personally, new job, new responsibilities, that kind of shit. And that's not changing for 2026, but, yeah, let's, I hope that you guys have a great year. I'll be around doing this. So yeah, let me know. dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. That's the email address, dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. I'm on the things at Dread Media on Instagram, on Twitter, on Blue Sky. There's a Facebook group just called Dread Media. And patreon.com/dreadmedia is the place where you can support the show for as little as a dollar a month going forward in perpetuity. Boom. Set it. Forget it. Thank you to everybody who does. Let's get out of here with one more song. Now, this was a really late 2025 release, but I wanted to include it because I'm a big fan and also contributor to this band, Ovid's Withering. I don't know exactly what Aaron would refer to Ovid's Withering, but they're like a symphonic, djent-infused deathcore band, and I did some voiceover on their now classic record, Scryers of the Ibis. And I also did some voiceover work on their record, Terraphage, which Aaron went back and re-recorded, remixed, or did something. I'm not entirely sure. There's different versions of the songs that were there, and there's new songs as well as some further voice work from yours truly on the track The Bandits of Shamble Keep. But I'm not going to play that track because that would be narcissistic. But I want you to go to ovidswithering.bandcamp.com. I want you to go to ovidswithering.bandcamp.com and grab Terraphage Refaged, the new version. There's three or four extra songs. It's polished. It's cool. It's heavy as fuck. Ovid's Withering, Terraphage Refaged at ovidswithering.bandcamp.com. And the song I'm going to play also has the word dread in it. This is At the Dreadlord's Behest by Ovid's Withering. Could I do possibly anything else? All my blessings for you and all of us to have a wonderful 2026. You guys take care of yourselves, take care of others, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Battle in my favor. Secrets are scattered.